All right, welcome back. Pleased to be joined by Biggie.
Anthony, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it a great deal.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to have you. Really appreciate you being part of the show and looking forward to hearing more about Henri Picard. How did you get interested in Henri Picard? Why was it you and what was it about him that attracted you to him?
Well, you know, not just me. And that's really what attracted me to Mr. Picard. You know, in my time in golf, I've done a lot of reading, golf history, literature, etc. And I'd hear and read the name Henri Picard pop up often, but only in, you know, one little sentence, one little paragraph here and there. And I kind of wanted to dissect a little bit more who the man was. And I was blessed enough to have a mentor who's in the Carolinas PGA Hall of Fame himself, named Jim Westbrook, who asked me one day, "Do you know who Henri Picard was?" And I said, "Well, I kind of do." And he gave me a little, one brief anecdote type of thing, and it turned out he was mentored by Pick, as his friends called him. So we would sit and talk, and he would tell me stories about Pick. And it was such fascinating stuff, and not, you know, the record is outstanding. His play, you know, his performance as a player on what became the PGA Tour was no doubt impressive. He won the 38 Masters, 39 PGA Championship, but it was the person he was more than anything, that the stories that Mr. Westbrook shared with me, that just a real gentleman of the game that I felt like needed to get out.
You talk about in the book a little bit, you're talking about the person, a very generous man with his time to fellow pros. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, he had a real significant impact on Mr. Hogan's career, on Ben Hogan's career, and of course everyone in the history of the game. It's funny, you hear the name Ben Hogan on a golf course, and people will turn their heads.
Right, exactly.
You know, kind of thing. And everyone knows Ben Hogan. I mean,
sure.
even non-golfers know the name Ben Hogan.
Sure.
And for obvious reasons. You know, Mr. Hogan was a great champion. And Ben Hogan actually dedicated his first book, Power Golf, to Henri Picard. And, you know, the reasons for that, I think as I kind of dissected Pick's life and with several interviews, et cetera, you know, the reasons that Ben Hogan, he says in the book, that the reason he's dedicating it is because of who Henri was to him as a person. It wasn't golf instruction. It wasn't, he taught him how to be Ben Hogan, how to be a champion. It was the person and the friend that he was to Hogan. You know, along with that, I mean, significant, Pick worked with anyone who came to him, really, on the PGA Tour, and they all did. Sam Snead, you know, before he went on his run, went on his massive run, dominant run, he came to Pick, and Pick worked with him on a certain couple of little portions of with his driver, built him a George Izett driver, in fact, and then of course Henri said later on in his life, no lesson cost me more money. You know, Byron Nelson, another one who he didn't really necessarily work with, but they had an equal amount of respect for one another as competitors. They were the guys in 35 to 38, 30, well, 41, really.
Mm-hmm.
Pick and Nelson were really the two guys who were the top guns.
Right.
In fact, there's a neat sequence I'm sure you noticed in the book. Pick beat Byron Nelson, and I don't want to spoil the surprise for your listeners, but Pick beat Byron Nelson in the 1939 PGA Championship at a New York club that no longer exists, which I found really interesting, too,
yep.
Called Pomonic, and you may be able to correct me on the pronunciation of that, as I've spoken with several New Yorkers. they have said it's Pomonac, but it's spelled with two O's, but that's how you guys talk.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's a little different up here, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But you did all right. You did all right for your first time. We'll take it.
Great. Well, and you know, and it, that part was really an interesting thing because it kind of, you know, just got forgotten about. And I used a photocopy of the scorecard to write the Pomonic sequence.
Right.
And, you know, here's how these guys did it back in the day. Between the two, between Pickard and Nelson, and it was match play, they, you know, they line up and meet in the finals back
right.
The PGA Championship.
Which was, right, it wasn't all stroke play as it is now.
Yeah, and which would be an interesting thing to see, to see an event like that go back to a match play. I guess they have it with the World Golf Championships.
No, I agree with you. I think I'd like to see match play. I think obvious, for the obvious reason that we don't, is because of the TV and the uncertainty of it, and not knowing what you might have to do to fill an hour's time or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I would love to see more match play, regardless if we already have it in the WGC.
It'd be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So, Pick and Byron Nelson met in the finals, and I don't want to spoil the entire surprise, but between the two of them, and, you know, again, I used it to write quite a bit of the sequence and a lot of research, and between the two of them, on that day, they made 20 birdies and 2 eagles in the match.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
Beautiful stuff, you know, and I will share one sequence with, and just give maybe as a testament to how gritty of competitors. And it's not to say that the guys on the PGA Tour now aren't great competitors,
right?
But these guys back in this era were guts. I mean, they really, really, you know, they were playing for little money, and it was the heart of the game, really. They played for the spirit and heart of the game. And so Nelson hit his ball into the hazard on the first hole in the match, and he basically conceded the hole or whatever it was. I think he ended up dropping, hitting his ball up there, but it was clear he wasn't going to win the hole.
Right.
And walking off the green, and Pick was a real humble guy, real quiet, didn't talk trash. And he turned to Byron, and forgive me if I get this Northeastern accent wrong, but he said, "Byron, you can't stop me one up and win, or something, you know, something like that."
Right.
And then, of course, he ended up going 3 up, and then the match went, you know, overtime, sudden death. That one was really the neatest to me. That was the most fun to write. Was the Pomonix sequence, just for the match itself was one that was just fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, and then you throw in the banter, but you're talking about guys who are virtually on the verge of both shooting 59 for the most part.
Oh,
you know,
unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. You know, some other people, and the people of fame, so to speak, that Pick worked with. One, Beth Daniel, who I'm told, I'm very, very honored. I'm told that she enjoyed the book very much, and I hope to have the opportunity to speak with her when she gets back from the Solheim Cup.
Absolutely.
She was a student of Mr. Picker.
Yes.
And actually, I had a couple of stories. I talked with a family member and had a couple of stories of Pick and just the way he was, kind of thing. But
right.
Several others, you know, that the lines run through, you know, the lineage, so to speak, runs through, that Mr. Pickard had, you know, Jim Westbrook, my mentor. He won the Carolinas PGA championship, or the Carolinas Open, and followed in his mentor's footsteps, in fact. And, you know, it was shortly after he had battled cancer and, you know, gone into remission, and went down for a lesson with Pick, came back and won the Carolinas Open the following week.
Wow.
But, you know, it wasn't just the great players and the skilled players. It was also, you know, we talk about growth of the game and the Grow the Game initiatives, et cetera. Pick was a guy that was doing that long ago, you know, the growing the game. He worked with, I spoke with a former student of his, who was 12 years old when she first started taking lessons from Henry Pickard, and continues to play the game now in her 70s.
Wow.
You know, and still refers to the notes of Mr. Pickard, you know, when she's having a bad go of it on the golf course. So, the impact that he had, yes, it was, you know, PGA Tour players, et cetera, and LPGA, and great players, great amateurs, state amateur champions, and all that. But, you know, it was the weekend warrior, so to speak, that he really encouraged and helped get better, so that they encouraged to play the game of golf. And that's how you grow the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that people forget. Maybe not so much for people like ourselves who love the game, but those guys back then. It's not like today where they get on their G5s or whatever and they fly away. I mean, those guys were going back to work on Monday morning because they had people coming in on the lesson tee.
Exactly.
So I agree. You know, they were definitely part of growing the game for sure. More in the sense of where the rubber meets the road. I mean, we have guys who have star power and may attract some people, but these guys were on the front lines growing the game and trying to make a living.
That's right.
On a professional level.
Yep. And that was the neatest part. In fact, I've talked to several people who, when Mr. Pickard was teaching, whether it was at, you know, he's a Massachusetts native, and then he went down to Charleston with his pro, and it's all covered in the book. You know, and then the reason the book is called The Hershey Hurricane, Grantland Rice dubbed Henry Pickard as the Hershey Hurricane because he was winning every tournament that he was in. You know, but people, and then, you know, he ended up at Canterbury in Ohio and then down at Seminole, the famed Seminole in Florida as well. And several of his students have told me that they used to just sit on the practice tee and watch him teach.
We just finished off a little bit there, touching upon the magnetism of the man, the generosity of the man. To me, the obvious question is, why do you suppose that he has become sort of a lost part of history? If, you know, here's Ben Hogan, who, you know, is known as, you know, the Hawk and or the wee Iceman, as they call them across the pond.
And a great champion.
And a great champion, but not accessible, okay? Certainly not accessible. So, you know, when people are not accessible, they, you know, the myth grows and people want to know.
Sure.
So you would think, here's a guy who dedicated a book to somebody, and you would think that people would just sort of go after him just to learn more about Hogan. Yet
you really would.
You're right, you know. And so to gain any kind of access behind Hogan and the secret and the whatever, but and yet he still, you know, has become a bit of a lost part of history. Why do you think that is?
You know, that's a great question. Something I honestly, Anthony, I really wrestled with a lot to try and figure that out. And I asked that question to most everyone I interviewed. And the obvious answer is, you know, he was in the Bobby Jones era. Pick was.
Right.
He really began his career. And, of course, Mr. Jones was such a great champion that he swallowed the limelight. I think a number of reasons. One, he was a very humble man.
Mm-hmm.
He was so modest, and he was such a person that if he won a match, you know, one of his partners was Johnny Rivolta, who, by the way, was an absolute gem and someone who's kind of gotten forgotten about also. He may be my next project, actually. But
sounds, you know, interesting.
Really. And he was a beauty. He was a fun one.
was he like a Hagen type?
Yes. And, you know, he and Pick were roommates quite a bit, and often, and I say in the book, often when Pick was just heading off to the golf course, Johnny Rivolta was just getting home.
He got along with Walter Hagen probably pretty well, I would suppose.
And so did Pick, and they were great friends, and that's covered in the book quite a bit, too, as you know. Walter Hagen was actually, had a very significant impact on Henry Pickard's career. He became his mentor early after Pick beat Walter Hagen, actually handed him his first professional playoff loss.
Huh.
Walter Hagen. Hagen really took him under his wing and really supported him and just was his friend.
And those guys did that kind of stuff. You know, you mentioned in the book that he had offered to bankroll Hogan, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, there's kind of conflicting proof on that. And,
right.
And I know the real answer, but I've asked to hold that for book two.
Okay. Okay.
But the short answer is, and what Mr. Hogan said, and I think what Henry also said, was, you know, the security of having it there. And we've all been there.
Right.
We all need a hand up and everything else. And the security of that, you know, and knowing that, I think, pushes you to the finish line or pushes you to keep going, knowing that in the worst case, someone will be there to give you a hand.
Yes.
You know, someone respected will be there to give you a hand type.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, you know, there is a comfort level there, knowing that they have something to fall back on, and you're right.
It just put them at ease, I think. You know, so, you know, being in that era with those, with all of the great, in my opinion, the greatest, I think it would be, and obviously it can't happen, but it would be a really, really neat thing to see those greats up against the greats of today. And I'm here to tell you, I really believe that those greats of yesteryear would have a little something to show these guys today.
Yeah, it would be. Would you give them the modern equipment, or would you make the young guys use the old equipment?
Well, you know, Anthony, I have I have a theory. I think it would be neat to see the guys go back to a little bit of that equipment from time to time. They ought to have an event where you can't play with anything, any equipment made past the 50s, 60s type of thing. Be interesting to see. And these guys were just the ball strikers. They were the best. The guys of this golden era were the best. They were playing with the greatest equipment of the day. Now it would be considered faulty.
Yeah.
So it really, I think because Pick was so humble, often when he and Johnny Rivolta would win, it would be Rivolta played great. Well, Pick made 8 birdies on the day. He did all right, kind of thing. But it was just in his character to be modest and very humble, and I appreciate that. I think that was probably one of the bigger reasons. The fact that World War II really happened in the peak of his career really was probably the biggest factor, I think. Was the biggest factor. And, Pick was a tough guy. He said it like it was. And so I would imagine back in that time that probably rubbed some people the wrong way.
Yeah, no, certainly. And you know what? And the other part of it is he could have been, some people probably could have asked, and he could have said, "I'm not here, I'm not, if you have a question for Mr. Hogan, go ask Mr. Hogan." Sounds like
he was
that kind of guy.
That's perfectly put. That's exactly how that's how he did it. That was Pick, in essence, was if someone wanted to talk to Ben Hogan, we'll take it up with Ben Hogan.
Right, exactly. Do you have a favorite anecdote in the story, a favorite part of the story, a story that kind of you just enjoyed really a lot?
All of it. Really. I can't pick out one. It was so fascinating to write. It was such a great honor to write, really.
Right.
To have that opportunity to dig in. To be honest with you, just again back to the toughness of these competitors, there is an anecdote in there Mr. John Birmingham shared with me that was probably my greatest joy, was I called Mr. Birmingham up on an idle afternoon to explain what I was working on, and there was this beautiful pause on the other end of the phone, and his response back was something to the effect of, "Pick and I were best friends. What do you need?" Kind of thing.
And right.
And as time went on, I think the best part to me was when the completed product, the finished product, was done, and I passed it along to the people involved who knew Henry. And, and had a close personal relationship with him, and they all gave me their approval. I wasn't seeking approval as a writer or anything else. I wanted to capture the man.
Absolutely.
And for them to give me that approval, and when they didn't have to, this is about their friend. It's not about Seamus McGee.
Right.
It really, truly isn't. It's about getting someone who deserves that attention and praise for not only being, a great player, but the person he was. The anecdote that I think was the most fun is a testament to how tough these guys were. Gene Sarazen sequence, where they were at a tournament competing, and Gene Sarazen walked and put his foot 4 inches, 6 inches from Henry Pickard's ball in the fairway. Just put it there and kept it there. And Pick thought nothing of it, didn't say, "Hey, you want to give me some room," anything like that.
Right.
He just went ahead and hit, knocked it on the green, and then he turned to Sarazen and said, "Look here, you little guinea, you ever do that again, it's over."
Oh, wow.
And of course, Gene Sarazen never did it again.
Wow.
And that just goes to the fact of how tough these guys were, and they loved one another. You're absolutely right, you said earlier. They support, and it's not to say that the guys on tour don't have great friendships and will for life, but these guys, there was just something really that they were all in it together, no matter win or lose. They were all really, and it's neat to see, with guys like Rory McIlroy, and of course the invent of Twitter, you see all these congratulatory messages when their friends win a tournament, and they're very sincerely proud of them. And that's how it was back in the day. These guys were real happy when their friend won. If they didn't win, they'd rather have their friend win.
Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to that. I think the level of bond, though, probably is not as great as I think back then. And the reason why I say that is because these guys didn't go their separate ways. They got in the car together to go to the next stop. These guys get on a plane. They go to, they meet, they hang out every 2 years at the or every year at the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, and you know there's a level bond in there, but you know it's a little different when driving in a car and you're driving for 12 hours to the next stop or whatever the case may be. And so I think the level of bond is it was greater probably then than it is now. Well, Seamus, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the program. I enjoyed it tremendous. The book is great. The book, the Hershey Hurricane, Henry Picard, Hogan's Mentor, Seamus McGee. Seamus, where did you come up with the?
That's a great story in itself.
Yeah.
How long do we have?
You have 1 minute to give me the story behind the pen name.
Short one. My weekly match, my group of great golfing friends, somewhere along the way began to call me Seamus McGee. Okay. I'm an Irishman.
Okay.
And I used to chuckle and say, when my first book comes out, you just wait. It's going to be written by Seamus McGee. And wouldn't they be surprised when my first book came out with a Seamus McGee on the cover of it?
That's fantastic. Well, Seamus, thank you very much. You got 10 seconds. Just tell me where people can get the book.
Go to Henry Pickard. We're developing a website right now, Henry Pickard Book, that will be live next week. That's going to be a really great tribute to Pick.
Okay.
And we're going to continue to add photos. I've had friends of his that have sent me several photos along with it, and we're going to really, really get our mission accomplished of getting Pick, you know, back in the mainstream of the game where people recognize him as a great champion along with Mr. Hogan and Mr. Nelson, et cetera, et cetera.
Seamus, again, thank you very much. And I really appreciate you coming on. And I appreciate the book because it adds to the fabric of this great game of golf that we all love.
I agree with you, and you know the glory to God for giving me the patience and the opportunity to write it.
Well, best of luck with part two, and when that comes out, we'll have you on again.
Awesome! Thank you so much for having me, Anthony. It was great to talk to you.
Great talking to you as well. Thanks, Seamus.
Okay.